This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
The following program is produced in a timeshare agreement with Civic Media. The views in this program do not necessarily reflect those of Civic Media. Enjoy.
The Wausau Business Show with Ryan and Paul.
Let's get down to business. Let's get down to business.
Wandering Wausau to get the beat on the street.
Careful.
This is Naomi. She's visiting from Hong Kong.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk to her. Yeah. She's watching her first Packer game, I believe.
Yeah, she's never been to Days Bola Dome ever.
No.
You were born and raised in Hong Kong and you're in Wausau, Wisconsin?
Yes, I was.
Oh,
yes,
and
I am.
And what do you do in Hong Kong?
I work in fashion.
Who do you work for?
Prada.
That's who?
Where'd you go to college? Harvard.
She's literally at Days Bola Dome.
The Bolarama. We're trying pull tabs for the first time. Wisconsin tradition.
You work at Prada in Hong Kong? What do you do for Prada in Hong Kong? If you don't mind me asking. Welcome to Wausau. We're at Days Bola Dome. We're watching the Packers.
Fantastic. It's our honor to have you.
Honor. We're honored. Would you consider moving here?
Sure, yeah, why not? From what I've seen so far, yeah.
Oh, that's great. And who's this guy that you're with?
This is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
Hey, I'm, yeah.
Why are you guys in town?
We're here to go sledding. We're here to watch a Packers game.
What do you do for Prada?
So I'm a merchandising manager.
Okay, what does that mean?
That means we get to choose all the beautiful pieces of the collection.
Uh-huh.
And they go on sale. Like, that's what gets put in the stores for sale.
Globally?
No, just for Asia.
Just for Asia, okay.
Just Asia.
Well, welcome to Wausau. Here's a pitcher of Miller Lite for you. Congratulations.
Cheers.
Cheers,
everyone.
Yeah, Happy
welcome
New Year.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Wausau before?
Never.
I can't believe that.
I mean,
Milan, Paris, London,
Hong Kong.
Wausau.
Yeah, first time, huh?
Old Navy is pretty close to Prada.
Yeah. Josh is also into fashion.
What are the odds that we could get one of these Days Bola Dome t-shirts on one of the Prada models?
I can try.
Oh,
I think it's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
A possibility. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. What do we gotta? Well, how does that work?
Well, we have step one. We have to buy one.
Okay, fair. And how would that work? Like in your imagination, I'm just curious. The vision of that. Like you just bring it. You know the model, and you go back to Milan or Hong Kong, and
go back to Milan. I'm in the showroom, and I can ask them to try it on. Yeah.
Wow, that.
It won't be on the runway show. But.
No, we just need a picture of one backstage or whatever.
A Prada model? That would be an honor. A real honor.
That.
Okay, all right. You want to shake on it?
Shake on it. Yeah.
In Wisconsin, here we cheers on it.
Okay,
cheers on
it.
It's official.
Yeah. Days Bola Dome, a Prada model.
Here
we go. Let's go.
Yeah.
Is over, and yeah, you decide whether it's been a long December or not. Hopefully you had a good one. It's the Wausau Business Show. I'm Ryan, and that's Paul. Episode number 38. Wrapping up 2024, and in 2025, what are our goals? Helping recruit some people to move to Wausau.
For sure.
Raise some more money for some charitable organizations.
I love charity.
And never give up on that dream of Wausau having a Red Lobster. Coming up on the show this week, the founders of the Imaginarium. But before we get into that, all right, Paul, so this is a business show, obviously. Business entertainment.
Right.
So let's talk about a scary topic in business.
Ooh.
Embezzlement and betrayal.
Yikes.
And we want to be delicate about this and respectful, but we want to hear from some community leaders. So we reached out to Pam Jackson, the CEO at the BA and Esther Greenheck Foundation, about a pretty sad situation that allegedly involved some embezzlement.
Ugh.
And I think, you know, anytime there's embezzlement, there's betrayal. It feels sad.
Of course.
And I think in business, we think about internal controls and separation of duties and generally accepted accounting principles.
GAAP.
You know, those are things that help safeguard against embezzlement in business. But when a person's driven to do something greedy, they'll find ways, I guess. And in general, when you take more than is given to you, then that's unethical, obviously.
And greedy.
Or when you enter into an agreement and you don't live up to your word, that's unethical, obviously.
Yeah.
Or when a person is solely in a position to strongly influence a financial outcome in their own favor, that's typically unethical.
And dangerous.
It's called self-dealing in law. Or even when a gift is given to you, you shouldn't always take it. Mm. Obviously, there are times when you shouldn't take a gift. There's a guy I know that used to work at the highest levels of Morgan Stanley Corporate in Chicago.
Okay.
And he was talking to me about an elderly man who had little to no family members. And the woman that was working for Morgan Stanley on this elderly man's financial and estate will and plan was offered money by this elderly man in his will. He said, well, why don't you take some of my money? A lot of money, because they had become very close. The elderly man and the woman that was working as his advisor at Morgan Stanley.
Yep.
And this elderly man told the financial planning woman working at Morgan Stanley that he'd like to leave her a large gift in his will. So the Morgan Stanley woman was conflicted. She had a conflict of interest.
Sure.
And she went to her boss or the board that was overseeing things or any number of group of people that was overseeing things that were objective, not financially benefiting from it in any way. And the leadership team and the advisory committee told the woman that was working with this elderly man at Morgan Stanley, absolutely not.
No.
And even if our clients love us, which we hope they do because of the good work that we do, we will never, never take anything from our clients except our normal fees as we help them financially plan their life because it's unethical.
Yeah, it's a conflict. Yeah, right.
So I think there's a lot of creative ways to take money under the table, and usually there are checks and balances to prevent against that in for-profit businesses and in non-profit businesses.
Yeah.
But if you as a donor are involved in like a small club or you're trying to do something nice for the community through a charitable donation to a group or program, and that club or charitable group grows and becomes successful, they have more finances cash flowing through there. That's a good thing.
Right, naturally. Yeah.
But at some point, it needs additional oversight. It's just prudent.
Yeah.
More than just one person. You know, it starts as a $500 thing and then it grows to a $10,000 thing. And then next thing you know, it's a $100,000 organization.
Real money. Yeah.
And it just needs strong oversight, especially if it's taking donations from a lot of people.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Well said.
But as a donor or supporter of the organizations, I think it's important to know how much money is going through that organization and to know whether or not they have a separation of duties or solid oversight. And if they don't, because the organization grew up like that, or they can't afford it or whatever, then it's totally fair to ask what systems are in place for assurances that there's total and complete transparency and accountability.
Absolutely.
And some might say, well, they showed me the spreadsheets, so they were transparent. They showed me the spreadsheets. Most people don't know. I mean, a spreadsheet looks official, but spreadsheets are not transparency.
Right.
And even if there is a board of directors or some sort of informal oversight committee, there needs to be clarity on who the people are that are checking the spreadsheets and matching those spreadsheets to the actual checking account or accounts, reconciling.
Amen.
In my career, one time a person tried to show me their salary by putting it out on an Excel spreadsheet. They printed it out and it had everyone's wages on there. And then it had theirs mingled into, you know, line 32 or whatever. And it all looked very professional. And their salary was just in there like everybody else's in the spreadsheet that they had printed out that they had also made.
Okay.
But I knew that they were making more than what was on the spreadsheet. And a lot of people are honestly seduced by spreadsheets or someone that can put together a nice fancy spreadsheet.
Right.
I've seen it happen by very smart people. And I'm not claiming to be more than a dummy.
Mm.
I've just had the good fortune of witnessing it. So just because something is presented in a spreadsheet doesn't make it a fact.
It can be trickery.
And doesn't mean that they're being fully forthright and transparent with you. Any organization that you're giving money to, you shouldn't be afraid to ask exactly where the money is going, and you shouldn't be hesitant to ask to see the financials of the organization and ask who exactly is responsible for helping oversee things. Even if it's a friend of yours, you could ask them that question because people are funny about money. So if they're asking you for money, make it weird back. And it's hard to ask people for money. It's hard to talk about money. So if a friend is asking you for money because they're raising money for an organization, that gives you permission to ask them exactly where the money's going and exactly how much money is in the organization.
It's your right to know.
And who exactly is looking at the checking account, who has access to the checking account.
Right.
And if the organization is growing and large and has over $10,000 in it, then it's fair to expect that more than one person has access to all of the checking accounts and that more than one person signs off on a lot of different things, including checks in some cases. And if they're not totally willing and open and transparent about everything, then maybe pass, even if they're your friend. I don't know.
Yeah, you have a right to know these things.
Because, I mean, no matter the size of the organization, a nonprofit or a profit, if you're connected with that organization financially, they should be proactively transparent with you about where every damn dime's going. And that's just the way it should be.
Yeah, damn it.
Honestly, I've got issues right now. Someone I'm financially connected to has kept me in the dark about a lot of financial information for years without a reasonable explanation. And now it's grown into a major issue.
That's the worst.
And it creates a lot of awkwardness and sadness. And it doesn't need to if there is full transparency. And let's not confuse confidentiality and secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people will say, well, that's something confidential. The organization, we're confidential about that information.
Right.
And oftentimes, when somebody in that position wants to be secretive, it's because it's financially convenient for them. It's just too often true. And it deserves added skepticism. And we can't apologize for that.
They're hiding something.
They're the ones making it awkward. Not you.
Right.
So if you're a shareholder, a stakeholder, a donor, financially embroiled with your life in any organization, you should never be made to feel guilty for asking any questions about any and all information about that organization that you chose to financially intertwine with in your life as a donor or a stakeholder or a shareholder of any kind.
Yeah, you have a right to know.
They should be inviting you to view the financial information and inviting you to view what the oversight process is. That's how the United Way of Marathon County is. It's how the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin is. The best of the best are fully and proactively transparent. It's black and white. It's data. There's not much nuance to that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you can't build trust on secrecy. It's a recipe for failure.
I think these are universal truths in business, in nonprofits, and in life.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that listen to this show that graciously give their time, their hearts, their money, and they deserve clarity.
Fact.
But before we get into the blessings in a backpack stuff with Pam Jackson, the CEO of the Green Hack Foundation, I think it's important to give a little plug for why the Wausau Business Show gets behind the Community Foundation of North Central Wisconsin and the United Way, because those organizations have financial audits and reviews each year, and they have long and well-established boards for oversight. They have specific systems in place and audit committees with numbers of people that sit on those committees and volunteer their time. And those committees work with independent outside accounting firms that come in once a year to sign off on everything and map all the financials and make sure everything is perfect and ties out.
They're doing it the right way.
And something could still go wrong, but the redundant multiple layers of oversight and checks and balances dramatically reduces the possibility of something going askew. And if something does go askew or haywire, then those checks and balances are going to reveal it faster than if not. And that's why we love the Community Foundation and the United Way.
Love you guys.
They are organizations that are built with extreme financial oversights to help donors drive their donations to the best local causes and organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Community Foundation, and specifically the Marathon County Fund and the United Way, do additional oversight of those organizations that they support.
On top of that, yeah.
So you're giving money to an organization that is well overseen, multiple layers of checks and balances, and then they're deploying those resources, financial resources, to the organizations that need them most, and they're measuring what that impact is.
As it should be.
And if there isn't the impact and they're not reporting their financials and doing all that, then the Community Foundation, Marathon County Fund, and the United Way of Marathon County pulls back.
Right.
And I've seen that happen a lot. Add to that that the Community Foundation and the United Way are highly rated by Charity Navigator, who's really another objective and well-known credible source for rating charitable organizations.
Yeah, they are.
And you've got a pretty good system there. The United Way and the Community Foundation have applications and check-ins and monitoring systems.
Proven systems.
And to me, that's worth an extra half a point or 1.5 administration fee, because we don't have the time or the energy to vet all of those organizations. I mean, they're dealing with hundreds of organizations.
Right.
And yeah, would it make me feel good to donate directly to an organization? Yeah. But I don't know who needs it the most.
Yeah.
And I don't know how effectively they're using the resources that are donating. But the Community Foundation in the United Way, it's their job to check, to monitor it. They're the filter.
They're experts. That's right.
It just never seems to end well when there's not enough oversight or transparency in any organization.
Yeah, it's trouble.
So asking about oversight and transparency should be actually welcomed.
Right.
All right. So blessings in a backpack. Pam Jackson is the CEO of the BA and Esther Greenheck Foundation.
Yeah.
But before we get into the depressing part of it, happy holidays.
Right.
We'll get the nice.
Yeah, you guys too.
Pleasantries out of the way.
The happy stuff.
Yeah.
So what's going on with blessings in a backpack? Can you provide us any information, or what you and the Community Foundation have a new fund set up because there were some concerns at blessings in a backpack?
Yeah, so we learned there were some concerns with their financials, and we know how, you know, rumors spread in a community, and we didn't want there to be any chance that people were hesitant to donate to this program because it is so impactful to, you know, over 1,800 kids are getting fed through this every week for the weekend. So we just worked closely with the Community Foundation, and we set up an additional fund that's called the BA and Esther Greenheck Feeding the Children Fund. So if you go to their website, you can click on the link, and that makes sure that every dollar that's donated stays right in this community and is going to help those kids every weekend.
Yeah, and your press release said no children in this program in the local community or the volunteers will be impacted by any of the financial
discrepancies. Yes. So yes, that will not impact the kids at all. We, you know, that was our biggest concern. One of their key volunteers, Aaron, has stepped in and is making sure the food got ordered. We had the funds to pay for that food, of course, and that the backpacks are still going out to the kids every weekend.
Well, that's great to hear, Pam.
But we have the funds to pay for that food because the BA and Esther Greenheck Foundation stepped in, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, I guess you can say that. So we did step in. We have been funding them for quite a while, but we set up this special fund at the Community Foundation and put our funds into that. And then also we've been sharing that link so that others who want to donate as well are still able to feel good about their donation and not have any concern as to where it's going. You know, we know these last couple weeks of the year, everybody's trying to get their donations in before January 1st. We didn't want there to be any, you know, hiccups in people feeling like that can't be where they send their money.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to assure everybody, the police chief has assured as well, this is a very safe place to send your money if you want to donate to the Feeding the Children Fund that we've got set up.
Yeah, because the other part of it is under investigation yet, and that's through the Marathon County, or?
I believe the Wausau Police.
Okay. So this
I believe. I can't say for sure on that, but.
Yeah, but that's a totally independent matter at this point, and you are completely independent, right, and you're making sure that that money goes to the right place and these kids get fed.
That's correct. There's not going to be any interruption in that happening. So that's what our main concern was, just that, you know, the kids who are counting on this every weekend still get what they need.
And that the donors have assurance that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted.
All crossed and dotted. Yeah, they can go right to the Community Foundation again and click on that link. And, you know, I can post it as a comment on your page as well.
Yeah, we'll post that link up there too.
It's important for people that want to donate and help these children, which is such a great cause. It's important they feel confident and, you know, that the money's going the right way. So we'll definitely post that link.
Yeah, that'd be great. That would be great.
Well, thanks.
100% that is all staying for the kids. So
great. Well, thanks for clearing everything up, Pam. I know there's been a lot of questions about it, and that clears it up. And I hope you have a happy new year and hope to see you soon.
Thanks. You guys too. Have a great day.
Right, thanks, Pam. Take care.
So from episode number 25, that's CEO of the Greenheck Foundation, Pam Jackson.
All right, Pam.
Thanks for coming on.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to some happier subjects, Paul.
Brian, looks like we got another caller on the line.
Okay, 7159 Wausau. Next caller. Hello.
The board is lighting up this morning.
Wow,
my gosh.
Look at all those calls.
Are the guys in the back screening these still?
Ian?
Hey, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I was listening to a podcast, not yours. I listened to that yesterday and earlier today. But
all right.
Who do we compete against in your life?
You know, I don't. For whatever reason, you know, there's a lot of former syndicated stuff out of Washington, D.C. that got played here in central Wisconsin for a short time and then picked up on. So I was listening to the Mike O'Mara show. It was Don and Mike kind of shock jock morning stuff in the D.C. market.
Didn't you used to listen to that show, Paul? Or who were the two guys out of D.C. that you used to listen to?
Yeah, they were in Maryland. It was, it was a decade ago.
It was like Bill and Bob.
Yeah.
Bob and Mike. It was somebody and somebody.
I want to think of it, but it's on the tip of my tongue.
Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara. Anyway, they played. They were on WRIG when it went all talk and actually had some pretty cool stuff on, like, I don't know, probably 20 years ago now. But
the old Big Rig.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah.
When they weren't playing Big Band Jump on Friday afternoons, they had some good stuff.
Yeah, named after the famous Duke Wright in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame, who founded WRIG, and the last few letters of his name were WRIG.
Oh, yeah.
HT, but they can't use that in the call letter. HT, he left off. He gave that to the cobblery.
Sorry. I shouldn't be talking about other radio stations.
No. I love Duke. God rest his soul.
Yeah, we have a lot of friends in the radio world.
Yeah. So, Brian, you were one of the first people to sign up for the Friend of a Friend competition. So far, everybody's equal.
So here's the deal. The reason I signed up, I mean, I've been considering it for a while, but my wife and I are selling our place, and we think we've got a deal in the works. I don't want to jinx it, but I think we've got a deal in the works with a family from down in Darlington, and that would, by the time they would move up and we would close, there would be five of them. So I don't know if that counts, but I thought I would throw my hat in the ring.
Yeah, as many people.
Five recruits.
That's five.
That's five. Yeah,
that's five.
Look, Brian, if someone's willing to sell their house at the good of the winning this competition and the good of Wausau, absolutely counts.
Yes.
Plus five for Brian Otten, everybody. Plus five.
Yeah.
All right.
And one, you know, before I let you go, you know, this is something that I appreciate you guys putting some structure behind, because I've got a whole pile of in-laws that live down in South Texas. And for years, I've tried to recruit them to come up here. A lot of them work in manufacturing, and so I've tried to get them to make the move. But unfortunately, the winters just are, everything they see on TV paints a picture of a pretty bleak winter, you know, hellscape. So it's tough. They only see huge pileups. They see power outages. They just see kind of the bad side of winter. And there's actually kind of a palpable fear of it. So I haven't had any success with the in-laws. So,
Well, that's a good insight. The palpable fear of the winter.
Yeah, that's true.
It is. It's just like they won't even consider it. They won't even, a lot of them, you know, won't even visit in the winter time at all, because they're convinced that it's too much. So,
well, it would be comparable to asking me maybe to move to Alaska, and I would be probably scared of moving to Alaska. Yeah, I can see where they're coming from a little bit.
The 6 months of darkness would get to you, maybe?
But I could be convinced.
Sure. Start a radio station up there, Northern Exposure style.
Yeah. There you go. Somebody's got to sell me. All right, Brian. Well, thanks for participating, and good luck until June when the contest ends. So far, Brian Otten, plus five on the Wausau Business Show.
Way to go, Brian. Competition. All right.
See you later, Brian.
See you, Brian.
I'll do my best.
All right. Thank you. Good luck.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
$10,000
at stake here, folks.
All right, next caller. Hello.
Keep them coming, Ryan. Come on.
Why, hello, Paul and Ryan.
Who? Yeah, and who's calling here?
Why, it's August Kickbush.
August Kickbush.
We get him again. Wow, August. What do we owe this honor to, Mayor Kickbush?
I would like to enter the Friend of a Friend competition. I've already recruited over 800 people.
800? Was it 800?
You make a very good point, Mayor Kickbush. Yeah, we can't give you credit retroactively for those. However, you're welcome to join the contest between January 1st, 2025 and June 1st, 2025. Do you think you can participate and get people up here again?
If I can walk from Milwaukee to Wausau,
I can
recruit more people to move to Wausau. I fulfill my vision.
That's true. You have been proven. How would you do it from upstairs, if you will? You're in heaven now, I assume. You were a great mayor.
Well, I'd have to talk to my lawyer.
Lawyer.
Oh. Lawyer's involved up legal.
I can only hope that Wasonians will fulfill my vision to move as many people to Wausau, the greatest city in America.
Well, yeah, anything you can do to help would be great. We really appreciate you, Mayor Kickbush, for really being the inspiration for us to start this Friend of a Friend competition. Mm-hmm. Any tips for...
I love your show. Long-time listener, second time calling.
That's true. We've had this honor twice. Well, Mayor Kickbush, feel free to go to our website, wasabusiness.com, and sign up for the Friend of a Friend competition. We don't discriminate, so even though you're in heaven and technically deceased,
deceased,
we have a place for you in this competition.
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful. You boys take care okay. and keep up the good work.
All right. Mayor Kickbush, everyone, thanks for calling in.
Happy New Year.
All right.
August Kickbush, great to hear from him. I love when he calls.
Always an honor.
Next caller, hello. No, that's all we got. We'll be right back on the Wausau Business Show with the founders of the Children's Imaginarium.
And hello, 2025.
Happy New Year.
May your new year be filled with higher ROI than the tower on top of Rib Mountain.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year!
This is the Wausau Business Show.
At Incredible Bank, we want to recognize two local organizations for making a difference in our community. Bridge Street Mission in Wausau actively supports those experiencing homelessness and hunger by providing a warm location, food, fellowship, help, and encouragement. In Weston, the Green Heck Community Center offers many activities that provide valuable social and recreational opportunities for community members. We are proud to play our part in supporting you. Thank you for being incredible.
The Wausau Business Show.
The children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride to make it easier. Let the children's laughter remind us how we used to be.
All right, we have Julie Bowman, Maggie Gordon, and Tammy Zekeris here from the Children's Imaginarium.
Welcome, ladies.
Welcome. Woo! Happy holidays. I think we can say that. Yeah, it's going to be the new year. Mm-hmm. And when did the Imaginarium officially open?
December 6th.
Okay.
Of last year, 2023.
So it's just over a year now.
Correct. Yeah.
And let's go back in time a little bit and talk about all the kind of gyrations that this went through to get the Imaginarium to where it is today. And Maggie and Tammy, why don't you start with why you wanted to create a children's museum in the first place before it even had a name?
It started at wine, cheese, and all that jazz.
Okay, all right. Just as a lot of things do.
I'm like every good conversation, it was around a glass of wine.
Yeah.
And I was talking about wanting to find a place for my daughter's birthday party.
Okay.
I felt like I had been to a lot of places in the community already. And I just said, I want something new and different. And Maggie's response was, that's why we need a children's museum in our community.
And how old was she at the time?
My daughter?
Yeah.
I had a 6 and a 9-year-old.
Okay, perfect.
And I said, you're right, we do need a children's museum in this community.
What year was this, roughly?
2012.
Wow.
Oh, it was 2011.
I had not had Harriet yet.
This is wild. Okay. All right. So it's around the 2012 time period, 2011. Uh-huh. And your kids were young and you're like, yeah, we need a children's museum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then from there, you sobered up and went on your merry way.
And we said, what were we thinking? No, at some point, Chris Kearns was new to town and she had a nonprofit finance background. And she had said she was looking to get involved with something in the community. So the three of us got together, had a conversation, and just started talking about, what does this look like? What does it mean? What do we need to do to make this happen? So we started doing some research. We joined the Association of Children's Museums to get some data and understand what other children's museums look like.
So wine, cheese, and all that jazz was on like Saturday, and Monday you're joining a children's museum?
I think thing? So. Okay. Do you have any
color commentary really, to add?
Yeah. It really is kind of a blur.
Yeah, I think one of our first meetings was at the Community Foundation as we were doing the research in our community, and we found out that this is not a new idea for WASA. Mm. This was something that went back to the 80s. It was something that was proposed when they were looking at, what do we do with the 400 block? Mm-hmm. And at the time, was it Prangies was the building that stood there? Mm-hmm. When that came, before that came down, there was a group of individuals that were proposing a children's museum at that.
You mean
space.
At the 400 block?
At the 400 block.
Yeah, because at one point that was East Bay too.
Yeah, years
right?
ago.
Yeah.
A few decades ago. Jeez, but yeah.
So it goes back that far.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then a feasibility study for a children's museum was actually done at that time. And it was found that, yes, the community definitely wants one, needs one.
Mm-hmm. So what year was that?
It was in the 80s.
That the feasibility
was that
study?
Feasibility study. Bart Kellenhauser. if that name rings a bell for anyone.
Old Bart Kellenhauser. Yeah.
Had a great idea.
Was spearheading kind of the use case for that mm-hmm. area in the downtown.
Does he work at the city in economic development or something? Or who's Bart Kellenhauser?
Oh, gosh. I don't remember.
I mean, we know, but for our audience.
Sure.
he was working closely at the time with the Community Foundation, and a member of the board we met with, she was on the board at the Community Foundation in the 80s, and gave us some insight into that.
And they were proposing to do it at the 400 block at the time?
In the building that stood
okay.
on what is now the 400
right.
block.
Okay.
Right, okay. And then there was iterations from there. There was the federal building that's now the apartments here.
Yep.
A request for proposal for a children's museum was submitted in that space.
Is this still in the 80s or are we getting
this
into the 90s?
This is now kind of 90s.
Jeez. Okay.
Yep.
So the feasibility study was done in the 80s and it took until 2023 to actually get a museum for children in WASA.
Up and open, yeah.
Yeah. So the correct. Biggest thing that they ran into and consequently we did too was location,
mm-hmm.
was finding a location. So it took us almost 10 years to really pinpoint the proper location for this, knowing
wild.
That we absolutely wanted to be downtown.
Yeah.
And then merging it with, you don't want to own a building right out of the gates as a nonprofit, as a startup nonprofit.
Sure.
So is there space large enough for us to lease? And it wasn't until the mall came down that we had a brand new opportunity.
So the federal building right there across from the library was in the 90s. They tried to do it. Somebody tried to do it there. And then that fell through.
It was a proposal. It was an mm-hmm. RFP. The city sent out an RFP for what should we do with the building.
Mm-hmm.
Request for proposals came in. One of the ideas that came in was a children's museum. And that was a group of ladies that were looking at the possibility. And so no idea really went further than that.
Okay.
Until the group behind the Children's Imaginarium started.
You guys.
Yeah, who's the group behind it? That's you. That's the three of you. Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of visionaries and donors that saw the need.
So then weren't you trying to get the Masonic Whitewater, where Whitewater Music is now at one point. And that was your first go at it?
It was. And we did a buy the building party and we hosted donors there and we had demonstrations, STEM demonstrations and kind of showing this idea of what a children's museum is, kind mm-hmm. of an educational component of what we were looking to bring to life.
What year was that? I like to keep
that. So our very first, after we wrote the business plan, our timeline was to be open 2016.
Okay.
Okay.
So I believe the buy the building party was in 2014.
I believe so.
Gee, so we went from 2012. Well, first we started in the 80s.
Yeah
with Bert or Bart.
With old Bart.
Bart.
And now we're in 2012 and you were at the wine party and
had the idea.
Yeah,
and now
2013, we worked on the business plan and the feasibility study of that, kind of doing our own research.
Another feasibility
study. That's when we learned
study.
All these historical attempts
wow.
or ideas. And then looking at finding our location, hoping hoping to be open 2016.
So then the Masonic Whitewater Music Hall fell through.
Fell through because we had a very robust buildings committee that ran a lot of analysis on what does it take for the startup to reach sustainability.
Okay.
And owning our own building was going to make that very difficult.
Okay. That's
the ideal. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We shifted to rather owning, we should lease.
Okay.
So that took the Masonic Center off the table.
Okay. They were looking to sell the building?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Correct.
So then that gave us some pause. We kind of reworked our business plan for a lease model.
Wow.
And then the public library came into play.
Okay. So, we're at the public library. We're going to do it at the public library.
Yeah. Now we're about 2015.
All right. Okay. This is it. We're going to do it at the public library, Paul.
Here we go. The third floor of the public library. Really cool on the third floor.
Okay.
Which I think very few people have been up there.
Yeah,
Friends of the Library were up there for a while. I think they're now back in the basement.
What was up there?
The Friends of the Library.
Oh, okay.
They do like a book sales and
okay.
They help support
what's
it.
What's up there now, just out of curiosity?
I don't know, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been up there.
Okay.
When we were up there, it was very cool. Very overlook of the city. However, it was built for office space.
Okay, so great movie.
We started an agreement with the county. This could work. This could be really fun.
Right.
Lease it here. It's downtown. It's got the space. Square footage we were looking for.
Perfect.
About 10,000 to 15,000 square feet.
Nobody's using it.
Right.
Yep. So it's going to work out. It's going to be great.
Yeah. What happened there?
Here we go.
We hired an architect to kind of walk us through a preliminary floor plan.
Perfect.
And then structural engineers came in and said it is not built to hold assembly, which is what the museum would be coded at.
What is that? What's the difference between assembly and office workers?
The moving load. Moving
the weight
load
of
rather
exhibits.
Than static.
Jeez. Okay. So
the weight would be too much is basically what we're saying.
Correct.
Or potentially be too much.
The weight of those children's minds.
The weight of all those 20-pound children.
So then you're like, all right, well, that's weird. Okay, well, back to the drawing board.
That location got the museum a lot of
momentum.
Yeah. Okay.
The community, like within the public and the community. Yeah.
The community was really excited about hearing about a children's museum coming to town. A lot of them liked the synergy between the county. And at that time, this project was called the Children's Museum of Marathon County.
Okay. And at some point along this period of time, wasn't there another children's museum that kind of started up at Cedar Creek?
Ooh, a competitor.
But actually started up, they're at Cedar Creek now. They started up in the old Gap.
At about this time, 2015,
2016.
Okay. The old Gap in the mall?
The West Center Mall. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So now we're
keeping up, I promise.
The Marathon County Public Library, third floor. Not going to work out because the architectural
load-bearing issues
doesn't work. Okay. Then a competitor starts in the old Gap facility in the mall. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking, all right.
Yeah. What are you thinking with that? Yeah. Someone beat us to the punch type of thing?
We were thinking this town isn't big enough for both of
us. Right.
Okay.
I would imagine.
Attempts and time was allocated towards trying to collaborate and come together on the two. Ultimately, visions and plans were far different.
Yeah.
Okay.
We actually used the city as a moderator in that process.
Okay.
To make sure that we were fairly discussing the potential for our community.
Objectively.
Yep.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the plans were just too different.
Okay. All right.
Together. So
now we're charging forward, and our children's museum is going to be better than the one in the old Gap. Well, you know, and
we're saying that, not you.
Yeah. Okay.
We have
all right.
Things to offer.
So we're going to keep moving forward with our plan. And what's the next thing we do?
Am I still talking? Should I?
Yeah, sure. Because I'm thinking, what did we do
so,
after
once we took the blow of the library couldn't support us.
Yeah. What was going through your mind after all these years? And then you hear from the architect, no, it's not going to work out because you can't have that many people up there or whatever.
Yeah. And then another similar idea in the eyes of the community comes up. That was a really hard time.
I imagine.
For us as founders, just, you know, we've done the research. We know it's good for our community.
We've been at it for years at this point.
Yeah. At this point, how long are our donors going to stick behind the project?
Because you were collecting money.
Correct.
Right. When did you
start collecting? At this point, we were about close to 2 million raised.
Wow.
And we were looking at this time in 2016, 4 million.
Jeez,
so we were almost 50% funded.
Where did your first dollar come from? Was it coming from the Whitewater Music Hall Masonic event that you had? Is that when you raised your first dollar?
No. Mm-hmm. No, it came before that. And our very first donor was Associated Bank.
Right. Wow. Right. Big shout out for Associated. Yeah. Nice.
The seed money.
Yes.
Okay.
So it was really, we had a question if this was something that our community really wanted. And yeah. we went back to our donors that we had at the time and explained the situation. This is where we're at. It's taking a long time. We don't have any clear direction forward. And they all said, it's a great idea. It should be downtown and you'll make it happen.
Keep pushing.
We toured a number of different buildings. People came to us, said, have you thought about this? We toured the old elementary school, the Schofield Elementary School. We toured the YWCA building.
Okay.
We toured the Cobblery.
We know that place.
We heard. Hess Law Firm. We toured a number of buildings. And
the Sable building.
Meanwhile, you've been holding on to this $2 million for years now.
Correct.
Where was the $2 million? In your checking account or
in a safe?
It was housed at the Community Foundation. That is one of the first things we did when we started this, was set up a fund at the Community Foundation so they could be our fiscal agent to manage it for us. We knew that was not something we had the time to do or the capacity to do.
Yeah.
And that gave us credibility in the community as well. We could tell people we had this fund set up at the Community Foundation, and it made them feel comfortable then.
And it was a 501c3 fund. So correct. You're donating to a nonprofit right there at the Community Foundation, your fund, and those funds were invested. So the $2 million became more than $2 million, obviously, over time, right?
Ours was not invested based on the type of fund that it was set up.
Okay. So, All right. Yeah. Moving on.
We earned.
Scratch that.
All right. And then you eventually found another building. So where are we going this time?
We are taking a, three block walk north to what was the Grable Call Center.
Oh, across the YMCA.
YMCA. Mm-hmm.
Old Dave Grable. God rest his soul.
That would have been a good location.
Okay,
too.
So smart here we choice. Go. We're going in. We're doing it at Grable. This is going to be awesome. That'll be right across from the YMCA. We're doing it at a great location. Kids at the Y.
It was. Yes. Yeah, parking.
That's okay. Parking. Was.
Here we go. We're going to do it at Grable. Let's go.
lots of windows. We were looking at the section right off of 3rd Street, so we'd be facing the Y.
Cool.
It had good traffic pattern for buses.
All right.
It just didn't go anywhere.
Oh.
I don't know. We had lots of renderings. We brought the architects back in. We did kind of a mock-up layout.
Architect said thumbs up. The floor works.
Thumbs up. It's
good for a gathering area or whatever.
Yeah. And it was just kind of, how can that building be used? It was abruptly emptied when the call center relocated.
Yeah.
Right. And then it was just kind of in flux for too long.
Okay.
Exactly how they wanted to demise the spaces. And we kind of said, we can't wait any longer.
Oh, okay. So they dragged their feet a little bit. Okay. Okay.
Had to move on.
We're moving on.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to cut bait.
So this is what, 2017 at this point? 18?
Well, now, Paul, it's a blur. Now we're just in the vortex.
Can we start dividing it by when COVID was?
Yeah. That's how we remember.
Is it pre-COVID?
It was pre-COVID.
Okay. It was pre-COVID.
All right.
Yeah, Julie.
Yeah, 18, 19.
Okay.
COVID. And then we kind of sat still for a little bit.
Yeah, because of COVID?
No.
Okay.
No.
COVID will never stop us, Paul. We're building this Imaginarium.
And then we did come full circle and started having conversations again with the library.
Okay, we're back to the library
there
now.
Did
we forget about the load-bearing issue? Yeah.
It had been too long.
There's a new county administrator in office, so we had conversation with him, and he wanted to look at some creative approaches, got probably a new evaluation of what it would take to reinforce the third floor.
Okay, now we're going to reinforce the floor.
Reinforce,
okay.
Which was offered to us initially, but I think it was probably nearly
$2 million.
Which would have been our expense.
Yeah.
We had a big campaign to begin with and not something we could put on top of that. So he was looking creatively and thinking creatively. So we had serious conversations with the county and had thought maybe that would be the new home for us.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
back to the library.
Back to the library.
And meanwhile, your business plan is locked and ready to go. Your feasibility study is proving that everything's going to work out because there's this demand that the feasibility study showed. Your donors are eager. Mm-hmm. Your kids are now how old?
Well, it was how many years that we...
Yeah.
So they're no longer 6 and 9. They're like 12 and 17.
They didn't stay the same age.
Okay, yeah. Good. Just to establish that.
My kids aged out of the Imaginarium by the time we opened the doors.
Yeah. And you stuck with it anyway. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So the library falls through yet again. And somewhere along the line, weren't you guys involved with the WASA Club? Wasn't that a possibility to put it in there?
The WASA Club actually was interesting. When Tammy and I first talked at Wine, Cheese, and All That Jazz, we said, wouldn't it be great if it was at the WASA Club?
Now currently the Museum of Contemporary Art.
Correct. David Anthony Hummer, yep.
Correct. And, you know, 2-3 years in, we had the opportunity to review a potential donation of the building to us for this cause.
So they were going to donate. So the city owned it at that point?
No,
or?
No, it was privately
owned.
They wanted to offer it up to you?
Yep. It was looking at, it was going to be a restaurant and kind of a special event venue. They decided that they weren't going to take the building to that and were, we had a conversation that they were interested in donating it to the Children's Museum Project.
Okay, here we go. We're going to the WASA Club now.
Yeah, wow. So this seems real.
We walked through the WASA Club with contractors and discussed what would it take to get...
retrofit this...
museum ready.
Yeah.
It would have doubled our campaign.
Oh, because of the size?
Just because what needs to go in there to support a museum.
Yeah. Mm,
so it's two floors. By code, we would need an elevator. Yeah. Mm. The basement was... dirt.
Oh, old school.
And it is on the National
Register of Historic Places.
So we would have to renovate it to a certain degree by those codes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that's a no-go.
You backed out.
So yeah, a dream location from day one. We said, wouldn't it be great if we were there? We had to turn away that offer gift.
It just wasn't feasible.
It's probably better anyway because there's a ghost in there named Martha and that's not good with kids. So it wouldn't have worked out anyway.
All right. So we're turning the page. New chapter. Here's the next chapter.
And then COVID hits.
Oh, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So we were in a holding pattern on building. We didn't have a great space lined up. Every donor was still backing the project. We didn't have a single donor
back out. Or ask for their money back.
Yeah. And we continued to fundraise during COVID. We had calls, we had Zoom calls, we continued to have conversation with donors so we could continue with that momentum with the fundraising until we could identify what our location would
look like. Talk about determination, my goodness.
And actually, good for you. COVID really solidified a whole new need for kids to be
most
interacting. It really showed the importance of parent interaction in the learning environment with their children. That was very much a blessing in this project.
At this time during COVID, beginning of COVID, the mall was still up.
Yeah, the building was still there. Yeah.
And talking about the blessings, our goal with the Grable building was to be open 2019.
Yes.
And that was the new opening date. It was a blessing we weren't open. We would have been a brand new nonprofit establishment for gathering spaces during COVID.
Right.
So that would have been the demise of the organization if we would have attempted to be open during that time. So it worked out in our favor that lease didn't come to fruition.
So then COVID floods the world and the mall comes down through that, right? Right. Mm-hmm. And then what?
We had a meeting with some representatives of WASA Opportunity Zone.
Who bought the mall.
Who bought the mall. And we didn't really know what the meeting was about. They called us in and said, we want to talk about some ideas. And as we walked in, one of the individuals in passing said, we've got a location that's brand new. And me and Tammy kind of looked at each other like,
we've
seen it all. What
next.
Don't
get our hopes up again. Yeah. Jerk.
So when we went into the meeting, the mall had not yet come down, was going to come down. So they were showing us kind of what that new area, the Opportunity Zone, was going to look like. And once the mall comes down, Yonkers is a standalone building that's not coming down. And it has this brand new facade nobody's seen before because the mall has been in front of it.
Right. Which is now home furniture.
Right.
Is it home or is it home?
We keep saying home. Okay, we don't know. Thanks for setting the record straight.
Yeah. Okay, so it's home, Paul. You got to remember that.
All right. We'll get it wrong again.
Yeah, all right. Okay, so then the facade, and now we're talking. Now we're in business. This is where the next step is going to be. We're going to do it here.
Yep.
When
and
did
it's
you...
a lease property.
Perfect for the new plan.
We're not owning it.
When did this fall through and why? Oh, no, it's there. Okay.
Yeah. No, you're, it's right over there, Ryan. I see it.
Okay, it's out the window.
We invite you to walk through.
Yeah. So
this one actually didn't fall through.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So when did you actually believe that it wouldn't fall through?
Ooh.
Ooh. Must have taken a while.
When we signed the lease and took ownership and responsibility for building out the space.
Okay.
Cool.
And then you had to raise another couple million bucks at that point, right?
At this point, yeah. Things got more expensive since we started this project in 2011.
Yeah, because building supplies went up and just skyrocketed during COVID and everything like that. Mm-hmm. So you guys had to raise how much in total?
Our campaign went from 4.2 million to closer to 7 million.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Once you acquired the property, was it fully funded? Once you signed the lease, was your project fully funded or did you have to raise more?
We raised, after we signed the lease, we were still raising. At the time our doors opened last year, December, our campaign was complete.
Wow.
Cool.
Whew. Wow.
And what a journey.
Yeah. What a journey of grit. So in total, basically a project that the city had been trying to do since the 80s came to fruition because of your tenacity. So kudos to that.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, ladies.
What a cool journey.
What are all of your roles now? You had to contract with a company to build the exhibits, right? And that company was out of Minneapolis.
Correct. If I'm not exhibits.
Mistaken. Yeah, an outstanding partner for us. We actually partnered with them in 2016.
Okay.
They came to Wausau and held a few charrettes with teachers, parents, community members, those involved in the museum project, and kind of shaped the vision for what would be in the museum. And at that time, we were looking at the library. So we held those meetings at the library.
Yeah.
So from 2015 on, Kidzibbets out of Minneapolis was a steadfast collaborator for us.
They stuck with us.
And those exhibits are really a reflection of our community too.
Right.
When you go in there, if you haven't been in there already, I mean, even if you're an adult, it's worth kind of going in and checking it out because of the exhibits. Green Hack has an exhibit that reflects air movement. And
right.
It's just an amazing children's museum and it's better than ever. And the location is better than ever. Probably the best location that you could have possibly imagined.
And getting better with the apartments going up and everything they're doing with the old mall location.
Yeah.
So it's just getting better. Yeah.
So then you guys hired, Maggie and Tammy hired Julie Bowman. And Julie started with you when, Julie?
In August 2023.
Okay. And then you worked until December when it opened.
Yep.
And Julie's the executive director. But what did the business plan say for projections for the number of people when you were doing the feasibility study that you put into your business plan for the projections of the number of visitors?
They talked about anywhere from, I think it was 25 to 30,000 annually. Mm. And then 400 members was what we were shooting for.
And 400 members. Mm-hmm. And in your first year, what did you actually get?
We have 1,100 members.
Whoa, shattered that goal.
And we've had over 37,000 visitors.
Wow, congratulations.
Yeah, you know, we talked to B.C. Kowalski from the City Pages in the Wausaunian, and he was saying, you know, how a year and a half ago or whenever he would walk downtown Wausau and it would just be desolate.
Right.
And he credited the Children's Imaginarium in very large part for bringing so many people, 35,000 of them last year, into downtown Wausau.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's all of the, not only all of the, you know, parents that come, but also all the schools. You're busing in a lot of schools. Can you talk about how that works?
Yeah, we've had... just in the year alone, 4,200 students from 24 different school districts that have come through. But, you know, you talk about the power of just talking about community. This morning, we had a family from Pekin, Illinois in our doors. So the kids were there. They had gone skiing yesterday, tired, and they're there playing dad skiing at the hill.
Nice.
It was a perfect collaboration and providing that opportunity. Blown away by our facility. We were sharing out with them the opportunities where they can go in downtown, places that they can go for lunch or to visit or tour or what have you. But that's what this is designed to do, is really be a community-based operation.
Wow.
So.
And what's the future now for the Imaginarium? Where does it go from here?
Up. All the way up. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking, like, as I was walking across from the Children's Imaginarium, everywhere you walk, there's STEM. If you look up to our construction, you see the people working in the construction, they're working with STEM.
Right.
If you're looking at the person hanging the lights, it's an electrician, they're working in STEM. If you're looking at them constructing the new roads, it's STEM. It's everywhere. And we have such a need in our community to be that community partner, to provide our youth, our future, to retain them, to educate them. We know that post-COVID that there's been some declines, and we can help assist that for our schools, for our children's, for our family, for social and emotional wellness. Mm-hmm. There's so much possibility that this is exciting. Their little vision from, you know, years ago, the impact that it can have in our future and really in Wausau. So, I mean, it's so exciting. I'm so excited to be part of it.
And how many employees do you have there now working?
Well, we have approximately 12. Okay. We have 2 full-time and the rest are part-time.
And a lot of them are volunteers, right?
We do have volunteers. Yeah, we have several volunteers that, not of the working staff, but we have several volunteers from all capacities, whether they're retired teachers or community members that are coming in and helping us with our 3D printer or working with our grow tower. We have lots of different volunteer opportunities, master gardeners that are coming in and helping us as well.
And you guys do stuff with food trucks during the summer too. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So this past in September, we had our Hispanic Heritage Night. And so we actually had food trucks outside because, of course, we have this beautiful food truck within our exhibit.
Yeah.
And so real life, hopefully this summer, we started off with Food Truck Friday. We're going to hopefully continue that up again this summer.
So every Friday, food trucks come.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, we were at that Hispanic Heritage event, excellent. And that was awesome.
Yeah, the kids love it.
Yeah.
What's the website?
Children'sImaginarium.org.
Children'sImaginarium.org, and you guys are just blowing the numbers away, and I'm assuming that is reflected in the bottom line of the financials, and you're going to be able to grow it and make it better and better with all that money coming in, right?
Well, with community support, we are a nonprofit.
Yep.
And with the growth, we have tremendous growth that was not expected. With that comes costs and expenses. Yeah. So community outreach and support always is wonderfully accepted and we'd love to have your participation. So yes.
Wow. And what's each of your backgrounds, if I could. Julie, what's your background?
Yeah, I worked in education. I worked for the Wausau School District, and then I worked for UW-Stevens Point at Wausau, which was formerly UW-Marathon County. So my background has been in education.
Tammy?
My degree is in hospitality and tourism management. So I started initially with my career in the hospitality field and somehow migrated into nonprofit work.
Wow.
So I did fundraising through special events and working with donors and
all fits.
Still have a passion for tourism. So I just love the fact that we're drawing people into our community as well through the Children's Imaginarium.
My background, I graduated in 2009 with marketing degree and went into marketing and sales. And then 2011 started this. Wow. So my background is
this.
In the Children's Imaginarium business. Totally phenomenal. In conclusion, if there was one thing that you could tell yourselves back when you were at the wine, cheese, and all that jazz event, was that at CVA?
It was at the Patriot Center.
Okay. When you were at that event, if there's one thing you could go back into 2011 or 2012 at that event, when you're drinking that glass of wine, eating that cheese, listening to all that jazz, what would you say? What would you tell yourselves?
It's going to take longer than you think.
And it's worth it.
It's worth it.
You know, it was a journey. We had some roadblocks. We had some ups and downs, but it definitely was worth it. Seeing the kids that walk through the doors, having a grandparent say to us, thank you for doing this for my grandchildren. It wasn't here for my kids, but now I can bring my grandchildren here. It's just, it was worth it. Stick with it.
Oh, amazing.
Well, on behalf of all current and future parents in Wausau, thank you very, very, very much.
Thank you very much.
Children's Imaginarium founders, Maggie Gordon, Tammy Zekeris, and Julie Bowman.
Thanks,
the Children's Imaginarium.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Wausau Business Show.
The Wausau Business Show.
With Ryan and Paul.
Ryan Gallagher.
And Paul Grinsell.
The Wausau Business Show.
At Root or Wear, we challenge the notion that sophisticated legal practices only exist in major metropolitan areas. Our team chooses to live and work in communities where many people only vacation or pass through. We enjoy a quality of life and have an excellent work-life balance. while still practicing exciting, challenging law in Wausau, Eau Claire, Green Bay, and Wisconsin Rapids. Since 1920, we've been doing what we want and where we want to do it. Find us at rooterware.com.
The Wausau Business Show.
And let's close out 2024 with a great quote that has inspired business leaders and entrepreneurs throughout the world for decades. It's by none other than Mahatma Gandhi. Here goes.
All right.
First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win.
Yeah.
So until next year, Wausonians, keep your heads held high because you're from Wausau, Wisconsin, USA.
Yeah.
And from high atop Rim Mountain, I'm Ryan.
And I'm Paul.
And this has been a Wausau Business Show year-end transmission.
The end.
See you in 2025.
Some folks just have one, you know, others they've got none. Oh. Stay with me, oh, let's just breathe.
This has been a Wausau Business Show Transmission. Allreiz reserviert 2024.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.